And you can hear Morning Editions every weekday from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on KUSP, your NPR member station. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs and upgrades and for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It's Monday, September 30th, 2002. Time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and humanity every week, every Monday at 6:30. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. You are listening to Geek Speak. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KVDH San Ardo. We're on the web at KUSP.org. In the air room, I have geeks Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Just walking the door is also Chris Dunphy, who will be our general geeks this evening. Tonight, we're going to be talking about hard drives. What hard drives are. Well, we're not going to cover what hard drives are. We're going to kind of jump ahead. We're going to talk about the different technologies of hardware, where hard drives are going, where storage media is going in general. And we have a special guest this evening, David Sabalas from... David Sabatos from Seagate. He's a senior product relations manager, and Dave will be joining us today. If you'd like to call in during the show, the second half of the show, to ask questions pertaining to our topic, please call 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Hello, David, and welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you very much, Lyle.
See, I told you I'd mess up your name. I did.
Yep.
Aren't you proud of me?
At least you didn't go for the Hungarian version.
So what is the Hungarian last name?
Sabados.
Sabados. I could have done that. Oh, well. So you are involved with the Enterprise Storage Group at Seagate. You're involved in pretty much kind of everything Seagate does in a lot of respects. Seagate's a Scotts Valley company,
mm-hmm.
correct? And how long have you been there?
I have been there now for about 3.5 years.
Very cool. So you know hard drives. You know storage media.
Yep.
All right.
Previous to that, I was at Adaptec, so it's the interface side.
And you... are really hands-on with the Seagate and Barracuda drive lines.
The Barracuda and the Cheetah lines.
Oh, which Cheetah, sorry.
The upper end and entry level.
And which one's the entry and which one's the upper?
Well, the Barracuda is the entry level. There's an ATA version of that as well as the SCSI.
Okay. Besides just the marketing term of entry, and I mean, what does it really mean? What is the Cheetah versus the Barracuda hard drives? What's
well, the Barracuda is a 7200 RPM disk drive.
Revolutions per minute. Huh?
That's correct. And the Cheetah can be a 10K RPM or a 15K RPM. And those are really reserved for the high-end workstations and then the servers out there, not typically seen in the average PC.
And what does the high RPM really give to the user?
Oh, added what's called IOs per minute, faster transactions. So if you're on a server system, for example, and you're running... these fast RPMs and the clients, which would be the users in a company, are accessing data. They can each access that data simultaneously much faster on a higher RPM disk drive.
What, doesn't bandwidth in the network come into play when you're talking about speeds of that nature?
Oh, absolutely. That's a function. But with the upper end stuff, now we're at Ultra 320 SCSI, which means 320 megabytes per second. It's kind of, you can think of it as a roadway. And we sort of widen the path of what the information can go through.
And that's on the SCSI side. And is that why the Barracuda, which is the kind of lower end, you do offer an IDE version because the interface doesn't have to be as fast?
Right. Typically on the desktop, actually the fastest desktop drives right now are 7200 RPM. And that seems to be a good sweet spot and what the market is requiring, keeping up with the technology
and
elsewhere.
Is that 7200 RPM, what kind of bandwidth does that do? And... approximately?
The ATA side currently is at about 100 megabytes per second, but if you're talking about a PC, the disk drive itself can only transfer data maybe at the maximum 50 megabytes per second.
Why such a discrepancy?
Well, you can add additional disk drives, run them together. You have your CDR drive, your DVD drive, so you can basically add more. But on the ATA or the IDE side of the equation, you can only run in a system four devices at a given time.
But there is this like future ATA, which is like going to be a serial ATA, which should be a lot faster.
That's correct. Serial ATA will start out at 150 megabytes per second.
Could that come into the server realm, though, and start replacing SCSIs?
It will, and actually there has been some shift in the entry server. Certainly ATA drives are much less expensive to replace, and for a lot of print or file server basic information in the entry level, ATA makes a great choice.
What are you running on your like personal desktop?
I am actually running an ATA. Well, I have a couple of them. Sean put together a system for me. It was very nice, and that's running an ATA drive, but I do have an older system at home that's still running Ultra 2 SCSI. Haven't really upgraded that one.
Okay.
And of course, we're running Ultra 160, Lyle, just so you know.
Our personal machines.
We need to upgrade you to Ultra 320 now that all that's emerging.
Just let everyone know, Sean's our in-house geek hardware guy, and so he builds everybody's machines out.
Back when I was at Maximum PC, David was supplying drives to me from Seagate, and I was reviewing them at the magazine, so our relationship goes back a few years.
Right,
actually, even at AdaptTech before that. So
you guys have known each other for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sean, you got any questions for David about storage media enterprise?
Yeah, you know, one of the terms people probably see out there lately is iSCSI, and I feel
yeah,
I'd like
that?
To learn a little more about that, if that's possible.
I know some. That's kind of an interesting... Now, iSCSI initially was going to be possibly a replacement for what it's called Fibre Channel. And Fibre Channel is another interface. Again, that's high-end server where you can run 126 devices. And iSCSI, the idea behind that was to run SCSI protocols over a network.
Hmm.
And it's starting to pick up...
You mean like an Ethernet network?
Exactly. It's kind of merging.
Gigabit Ethernet.
Exactly. Sort of merging the two together, although I'm not sure what the current state of that technology is.
So you'd have like super smart SCSI arrays that would have Ethernet type of capabilities with them?
Yeah, something like that, although the drives themselves would not be native with iSCSI. It would be some sort of bridge.
See, I thought iSCSI was just another Macintosh thing, you know, iMovie and iPhoto.
And with Fibre Channel, with what's called an arbitrated loop, where all the data is connected in a big circle, people sharing the stack of hard drives among their systems, your throughput across that arbitrated loop is better than it would be to your local your local hard drive.
Wow.
Crazy. So they use that at, I know after the Minnesota, who was Super Bowl winner of a couple of years ago, they outfitted their whole Coliseum. One team started it, and now they're all starting to do it, but Fibre Channel is a great way to broadcast video throughout a Coliseum.
I see.
You know, at high resolutions.
So, Sean, with Fibre Channel like that, you say that a remote hard drive could actually theoretically be a faster throughput. Well, what about the actual fiber directly to the motherboard? I mean, how is that interface to be able to access that Fibre Channel via the computer? Do you know the details of that, Sean?
I'm sure they're using a 64-bit 66 megahertz PCIX connection, maybe even faster. That's already moving on to 133. And PCIX 2.0 is coming out of 266 and then 533. So,
and it's going to get easier and more common to see that kind of stuff as
people doing animation and special effects for movies. They need this high throughput.
Absolutely.
Now, I do have a quick question about hard drives. I know for ATA hard drives or IDE hard drives, they don't, well, today you have ATA 100 and ATA 133 is emerging. The hard drives can't actually do a sustained output of that, and even their burst tends to fall short sometimes. So you'll have a sustained output of, you know, in between that 10 and 20 megabyte range. I'm wondering when you have SCSI 320, for example, is that supposed to be when you have a group of devices on a SCSI channel, it can fill that amount? Or how far can the SCSI drives go, the newer SCSI drives?
Yeah, that's correct. And it kind of goes back to the initial analogy where I'm talking about the road and widening the pipe, so to speak, or widening the roadway. That's exactly what it is. You have Ultra 320, 320 megabytes per second of bandwidth. So in theory, for each channel, you can run, well, if you're not even using your maximum burst rates like what you're talking about, 10 disk drives, possibly more, per each channel.
Here's where we should get technical and ask Dave to talk about how you measure the amount of data in gigabits per square inch and how you get that formula.
What is the term gigabits per square inch?
Gigabits per square inch, that's just referring to how much data you can actually fit onto a platter in a square inch. So it's exactly that, a gigabit per
square inch. It's like how big the actual
node,
the bits are.
So if you take that number, right now it's at 30? Or is it more? Is it higher?
We're currently sitting, enterprise stuff, 40. Yeah, about 40. Approximately
40 gigabytes 40 per square inch.
Gigabits.
Okay. Which is probably equivalent to maybe 6 gigabytes.
Well,
maybe 5.
40 divided by 16.
Yeah.
Theoretically, right?
By 8.
And then you stack up platters to get the actual large hard drives.
Right. And right now the trend is actually to reduce the number of platters.
Why?
Because you can store more information. I mean, we have, and you can reduce the cost of building the drives. That's one of the reasons why the disk drive prices have gone down. It's not just competitive factors, which of course that's an issue, but if you can reduce the number of heads and the number of rotating parts,
that's how you determine the size of a hard drive. Because if you have a drive that can store 50 gigabits per square inch, you have four platters with eight heads, one for each side, spinning at 15,000 RPM. That's how many gigabytes of data that drive can hold.
Isn't noise also a factor? Like the more platters you add, the noisier they get. Some things I've looked at before.
That's absolutely not true.
Not true. Okay.
Who is this person? No, I'm just kidding.
It's not true?
No, I'm just giving him a hard time.
Oh.
He's asking me the challenging questions here. The negative side. No, actually, in general, yeah, that is probably the case. I'm trying to think of what our quietest drive. It would be our Barracuda ATA 4.
So the speed really has to do a lot with the noise, then, of a hard drive.
It has, although...
It sounds like this is a sensitive subject for you. Is that a big concern in hard drive manufacturing, how loud?
You know, it was, and actually right now, it's a concern for the consumer electronics space because when you're bringing disk drives into the home, into your personal video recorders and whatnot, obviously you don't want them to be noisy. So all the manufacturers have focused on that. And in fact, the idle noise of these things, you can't even hear them. I was just really amazed because I haven't even really played with many of the current generation disk drives for a long time. And then I slapped in a Barracuda ATA4 and I couldn't hear it. And actually, we've gotten some complaints from people who are
not working.
We're saying that, I don't know if it's working because I can't hear the disk drive.
But then on the high-end server version, it doesn't really matter because they're going to go in a closet that's really cold and
it's
hot.
It's usually, it doesn't matter as much. Although, you know, if people can get it quieter in their server room, certainly they're going to want that. And that's,
well, let's talk about reliability on hard drives. I mean, I heard that the faster the drive moves, the shorter lifespan the drive's going to have. Is that something that you're concerned about?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I don't know where you got that info, because that's one thing I can talk confidently
about.
Good,
do so.
Our 15K RPM drives, those are server class, and they are actually the most reliable hard drive we've produced. I know it seems ironic, because you would think that, you know, the faster that it spins, the
but
quicker
just,
it would wear.
You just build
the
higher tolerances.
Absolutely. They're built to withstand all of that. The new generation use fluid dynamic bearing motors instead of ball bearing motors, so those last a lot longer because there's no metal to metal contact, and that of course increases reliability.
You're listening to Geek Speak. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Ardo. We're on the web at kusp.org. We are talking about hard drives, specifically Seagate's line of hard drives, and in a little bit we'll be taking your calls. We're talking with David Zavatos, a senior public relations manager at Seagate. Also in the air room is Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Chris Dunphy. My name is Lyle Troxell.
We'll be taking your calls. If you'd like to join in the conversation, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
On the next Talk of the Bay, Deanna Zachary hosts a discussion about the California Coastal Commission and the protection of the coastal environment. She'll talk to Charles Lester, who has been serving as the district director of the Central Coast region, which includes Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Luis Obispo counties. That's on Talk of the Bay, tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. here on KUSP. Find more information on our local talk shows at kusp.org.
Ken, you are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arto, or on the web at kusp.org. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room is Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Chris Dunphy, and special guest David Zavados, Senior Public Relations Manager from Seagate. We're welcoming your calls now at 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we are going to take our first call right now. Welcome, Stefan from Santa Cruz. Hello. Stefan from Santa Cruz?
Hello.
Hi. So, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
I had a question about FireWire drives. I understand that there's really two types of FireWire drives I can get. One is a portable that uses the power supply directly from the FireWire, so it doesn't need an external power supply, and the other kind does. I've also seen a couple things about FireWire drives that look like you can sort of buy an enclosure for them. I'm a Mac geek, by the way, and you buy this enclosure and then you drop an ATA or IDE drive in there and save yourself a little bit of money. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Actually, FireWire is sort of an interesting technology. Now, in terms of the whether it's powered or non-powered, I'm not quite sure about that specifically. But one interesting fact with the FireWire in terms of what it relates to with disk drives is that all of the disk drives within those boxes are ATA drives, in fact, and they're attached with a bridge type of chip. So it's not a native 1394 or FireWire connection. So, in fact, any off-the-shelf FireWire drive that you purchase, it's going to be ATA, but obviously take advantage of the FireWire interface.
And the difference between ATA and IDE?
Both of those terms are really used synonymously.
That's what I thought.
IDE, integrated drive electronics, and ATA.
Miles?
It doesn't matter what they stand for as long as it's reasonably interchangeable.
It's ATA attachment, which AT stands for Advanced Technology.
So my, if I go on the internet and I find a built to order FireWire drive that just comes ready to go and ready to be plugged in, and I also find an enclosure and an IDE drive of equivalent megabytes or gigabytes, where I add those two together and it's cheaper, there really isn't any reason to just sort of roll my own and save a little money.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, you got it.
Yeah, definitely. That's Sean, you're getting the FireWire drive, right?
I have one, yeah.
And you're going to be throwing a DVD player in it, which is an IDE-compatible device, right?
Oh, I have an enclosure, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I have a Maxtor FireWire drive, 60 gig. That is working great.
So you recommend FireWire drives?
Yeah.
So you get offering FireWire drives, or are you more offering the inside of the FireWire, the actual hard drive?
It's the inside. We're supplying the drives to many of the manufacturers.
Something I've noticed is the ones that take the power from the FireWire connection itself are usually mobile hard drives.
Right, small. Because they're
small. They can take.
They can be really quite small. Well, a good example of that is like the iPod from Macintosh. That's an IDE hard drive inside an enclosure FireWire device. Hello, Joe, and welcome to Geek Speak. I guess we lost Joe. Joe, if you'd like to call back, that'd be fine. So actually, Joe's question is from Gilroy. What's the difference between the Ultra 320 and the Ultra 160?
Well, obviously there's the bandwidth. We're widening the road, so to speak. So it's really a server type of thing. Actually, even Ultra 160 is. So if you're looking at it in terms of the simple definition, that you can add more drives to share the road space. There are a few technical additions that deal with error checking and whatnot. I don't have those specifics on hand. Actually, Sean may know.
The specifics on
Ultra 320,
yeah.
As far as the interface. You know, each generation of SCSI comes out.
I don't
and
know.
It's, CRC, domain validation. Okay, I remember that one is new with Ultra 320, I believe. although I forgot exactly what domain validation does.
But are they're usually enhancements for server.
Exactly.
Normally enhancements for server.
And they are backwards compatible.
Absolutely.
And isn't it true that more and more IDE is just the standard for, I mean, for home machines?
No question about
that. Yeah. You know, I have a question, actually. The 15K Cheetah,
mm-hmm.
one drive, what's the maximum throughput?
75 megabytes per second.
So you would need two of those drives to saturate, come close to saturating an Ultra 160 connection.
Or four of them with a 320.
You got it.
Right, especially if you're running them together in a RAID. And
wait, but 75 megs burst or 75 megs sustained?
Sustained.
But the Cheetah can do a faster burst than 75.
Right.
We tested one of them, and it was doing higher than a 75
right.
burst.
But that burst is only reading sequential data.
Right.
So if your data is scattered all over the hard drive, it's fragmented, you'll never reach those bursts.
But if you've got a perfectly tuned hard drive, right, all the data is aligned up, you could get burst speeds that are a little faster.
Well, digital video is always going to be sequentially read to. Hopefully, on the hard
drive. Yeah, and that's a huge market. It's really interesting seeing how Hollywood has adopted Seagate drives in general, whether it's Fibre Channel and SCSI. Music is being recorded from professional studios on all disk drives.
You know,
a lot of fun.
I have a question, actually. I've been wondering. You used to be able to buy AV drives that were, you know, calibrated for digital video audio so that you didn't get any peaks and valleys, you know, reading across the platter. Because any of those valleys would be dropped frames. Is there still those classifications, or are they all pretty much now?
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, there was the AV, what was the extended cache, but it was specific to AV, you're correct. And that was on the Barracuda 180 model, and my best guess at this point is that technology, whatever it was, is no
right.
longer needed, because obviously people are still using
yeah.
the drives, and if there were drop frame issues, then
right. you hear about them.
The
exactly.
disk drive can perform so much better than it needs to. It doesn't really need that much cache.
Right.
Now, how much cache do drives have these days?
8 megabytes on a SCSI drive is pretty much standard. For an ATA drive, from 2 to 8, 8 would be at the top end. The cache itself is kind of interesting, because if you bring the cache on the drive in a server environment where a lot of the information is random access, it can actually kind of hinder performance.
Mm-hmm.
But with the sequential data,
the video,
it can help. Mm-hmm. And there are some technical things which you can move into the drive specifications and actually make changes on how you want it to perform. Specifically, if you have a SCSI drive, for example, and it's a 68-pin, it'll be more fine-tuned from the factory to run in a AV environment, because most of the server drives are the 80-pin SCSI.
Oh.
So we do a lot of tweaking with the firmware, kind of optimize it for
That's
the environment.
Nice little tip.
Although you can always change it too. You know, there are those folks that you know, want all these things in their home system and
wow.
have farms of these drives, you know, at the cutting edge.
Are these home video editing, home video systems, the replacements of TV or VCRs, are those using SCSI devices or IDE?
Those are ATA
drives,
absolutely.
Hmm.
Because a lot of that is, you know, you move into the home marketplace or the consumer market, and the cost issue or the cost factor becomes a lot more important. So that's definitely the case with those.
Well, I'm going to try to be the general computer user wanting to upgrade my hard drive. So 2 years ago, I bought a computer, top of the line, and I had a hard drive. And I've been burning all my music to MP3s so that they're on my machine for the purpose of being able to listen to them from my machine. And I've run out of hard drive space. What do I get?
Well, obviously, you get a Seagate drive. We actually just came out with a retail kit.
That was so... That was great. Okay, go
perfect.
On. Yeah.
Such an obvious answer.
Of course, right. And Sean, what kind of processor, if I was going to put a processor?
It'd be an Athlon, of course.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
No, and
Miles, no bias
what operating
with that
system
answer.
Would I want to go on?
Oh, you'd definitely be using Linux.
Not
sounds like a really good
all.
Machine.
Actually, okay, but in all seriousness with the upgrade, you know... It's actually quite fun. I've really enjoyed piecing together my own PCs, and when I first started doing it, there was that sort of element of fear, like, I can't build a PC or upgrade a PC. This is just too much. But in fact, now it's so easy. I mean, there's installation software where you just kind of load the software, mount the drive in a few steps, and you're done. And we have a retail kit for our Barracuda ATA 80 gigabyte drive. And I think the retail kit with all the software, cabling, all that, somewhere around $150.
So if someone's looking to upgrade, they can get like an 80 gig hard drive from multiple manufacturers, actually, for about that, under $100.
They could.
Or about $150. Okay.
Yep.
80 so, gigs, do you think that'll be enough?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Definitely not.
Not if you're starting to edit video, that's for sure. If you've got a newborn and you're doing a lot of video editing, no.
Yeah.
You need terabytes. So speaking of terabytes, let's talk about the future of drive storage. I noticed that in Seagate, the Enterprise Storage Group is this group of people, but it's Enterprise Storage Group. It's not Hard Drive Storage Group or anything. It's potential for other things besides hard drives. So what are those potentials?
Well, enterprise in what it is today is the basically everything that runs the business,
right.
the storage area networks, whatnot. With the future of storage, it's kind of interesting because we're at a point where, you know, a lot of those specific applications and needs will grow, and our annual growth rate of using storage worldwide is about 50%. So that's new content that is being stored. So the challenge is obviously making the drives be able to fit more data and then run faster speeds to be able to retrieve that data. So I also work with a group out of Pittsburgh called Seagate Research, and they work with all the technologies that are going to be out and emerging, you know, 10 years from now.
And what kind of things are we talking about here?
There's one called heat-assisted magnetic recording, otherwise known as HAMR. And what that involves is using a laser that sort of heats the media while it's simultaneously writing data magnetically. And with the heat, it allows you to store more data bits. One of the issues when putting information in those tight-fit spots is called something called the superparamagnetic limit. It's quite a handful of a word.
Yeah.
But anyway, what that means is the data bits themselves, if you think of them as zeros and ones, and when a magnet is going over them or the head, you know, you're flipping the bits one way or the other. So the idea is you want to make these things as small as possible and as close together as possible. But if you bring them too close and you bring them too small, they can kind of
interfere with each other.
They can interfere. They flip, but they could flip by themselves. Thermal heat can do that. So what you're doing with the HAMR technology is you're actually heating the media, making it unstable just for a moment. At that location, so you can move all that data and write the data, and then you take the laser away from it, the media becomes stable again, and then you have all of your stuff.
Wow. Right. How is that different from magneto-optical technology from years ago?
Well, it's magnetic.
It's actually somewhat similar to that.
Yeah.
But it's an extension of that. One of the issues with MO technology is they could never get the speeds up that were required. So
we got one more call from Scott from Salinas. Hi, Scott. What's your question regarding size of hard drives?
Yeah, couple questions. Well, number one, on SCSI hard drives, I'm looking at an 18 gig, but I want to put it in a workstation. Is it going to pose a problem?
I don't think, not following your question, why it would pose a problem. No, not at all. I mean, SCSI hard drives are used in workstations all the time.
Are you running an operating system you're concerned about the size of the hard drive on?
Yeah, it's going to be running Windows 98, and the type of hard drive it is, it's basically a server hard drive. It's listed as a server option, which I pulled off of, I actually got it off of eBay.
Well, it could be a SCSI hard drive. If it's a SCSI hard drive, your workstation probably doesn't have SCSI devices in it. So that could be a problem. You might have to get a SCSI card.
I wasn't sure if your concern was over the capacity or making it work.
Well,
the physical size of it's going to be the same.
Yeah, the drive is going to be the same. The interface it connects to is different. And Lyle's right.
Right, but are there any limits as far as I've got an Adaptec 2930 SCSI card that it's going to be connected to?
It'll be fine.
Yep.
And Scott, we're out of time, but I'd go for it if it's a good deal. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives and PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. We've been talking about, coincidentally, Seagate hard drives. with David Sabatos, Senior Public Relations and Manager from Seagate, also in the air room. And thank you very much, David, for coming out with us.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Chris Dunphy, completely silent in the back. Coming up next is Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo. We're on the web at kusp.org. Please stay tuned for Two Steps in the Blues, my favorite music show on KUSP. But first, a little bit of Stardate.
Stardate, September 30th. As moons go, our own is rather dull. It's a big hunk of rock with no atmosphere, no liquid water, and little or no volcanic activity. It certainly doesn't compare with some of the big moons of Jupiter or Saturn, which are covered by thick layers of ice, sizzling volcanoes, or possibly seas of liquid methane beneath an organic haze. Yet the moon is of great scientific interest because it's a companion to Earth. Precisely.